First and Now is the official BC Lions podcast and radio show. We're on 730 CKNW, and it's presented by World Vision Canada. Join the BC Lions at the Walk for Water event on October 5th at Langley's McLeod Stadium and find out how you could win a 2026 road trip for two with the team by participating. Visit bclions.com/6k for details. You can win a trip to Calgary, perhaps. Moj will share a Spalumbo's sandwich with you.
No, I won't. Not a chance.
Yeah.
Buy your own.
Yeah.
Good. Tell you about Spalumbo's. You can come with Julio and I to Spalumbo's. I'm not giving you any of my sandwich.
Yeah. For those who aren't aware, it is a pretty damn good sandwich, though. It is.
Mama's meatloaf or the meatball? Both of them are tremendous.
Meatball.
Mama's
every
meatloaf
time.
Is special only, I think it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday special or something like that.
So. Okay. Kowalski is just looking at us like, have you ever been to Spalumbo's?
I have. Well, we get it delivered after games sometimes.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
So, yep. It's talk around the office, though. Tyler Gammon brought it up to me today, talking about going there on game day. So, I mean, it comes with a good reputation, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're appreciating the plugs right now. But, yes, in case you haven't remembered, we are going to Calgary this week. A big, big game. Lions looking first Western game in quite a long time for the Lions. Was it the Watermelon Smash, the last one?
Correct.
July 19th? Yeah, that's how long it's been. So have to start stacking wins in this division if you want to perhaps avoid a crossover or avoid missing the playoffs altogether. But first off, gentlemen, we will look back at a impressive 38-27 win over Calgary. Lions defeat the Red Blacks to get to 6-7, tied with Winnipeg in points for third in the West Division. Moj, upon review, what'd you like best here?
Well, I mean, the offense in the first half, how can you deny that? Four possessions, four drives. I'm not going to count the kneel down at the end of the half, so when you go 4-for-4 with touchdowns, I'll tell you what, it puts a lot of pressure on the other team, and it also helps out your defense. Defensively, I like what they did with the front getting to Dustin Crum on, I believe, 7 occasions, Matthew Betts having 4 of those sacks.
Yep.
What I didn't like was 30 of 35 with 2 receivers gaining over 100 yards and Dustin Crum throwing for whatever, 305. So plenty of room for improvement. In terms of the secondary, I love what they did with the pass rush. But, you know, that's one of the things. And you talk with Buck Pearson, Colin will be coming over shortly. But, you know, when you have young players, one of the keys that they have to learn as pros is to stay even keel, not get too high, not get too low. And, you know, the nature after a victory is to get extremely high and kind of live off of it. But, you know, it's just like a loss. You got to flush it after 24 hours and work to improve and to get better. And I think that's what Buck Pearson and the staff are focusing on.
Speaking of the offense, Nikki, I believe it was 4 of 5 in the red zone. And they were preaching that all week. We talked about it earlier this week with Nathan Rourke at our YouTube page. Check out that interview. Finishing drives. That was the major key going in. And they delivered on that for the most part. I think the only miscue in the red zone started the second half where it looked like he kind of threw one behind Javon Katoy, settled for a short field goal.
Yeah, and you could tell that it was frustrating Nathan postgame too, right? That's the level of execution that this offense strives for. And you're right, like lately this team has been clicking at a good pace in the red zone. 4 or 5 was the number on Friday. And, you know, combine that with, you know, staying above 55% on second down, I thought these are two key reasons why, when you look back to about a year ago right now, the offense was struggling. Nathan Rourke was still trying to find his game, but now they're consistently hitting 30 points. And on the flip side, Ottawa was clicking at under 40% on second down. And to me, that's where this game was won and lost. And 7 sacks for the Lions definitely affected the Ottawa Redblacks not executing well on second down and those drives ending short. But that's where I'm looking at in terms of, you know, what impressed me in this game. And it was an efficient day, right? It was kind of boring in the second half, which is good. I don't know. I'm as good as these 41-38 shootouts are. It was kind of nice to have, you know, a nice finish, you know,
breathing room.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and take care of business in the fourth quarter too, as much as Ottawa kind of, you know, put lipstick on a pig right at the end.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Moj, back to the defense, 3 major foul penalties keeping Ottawa drives alive and resulting in touchdowns every time.
Point.
How concerning is that? Like, you know, you put your coaching hat on. What are you doing to sort of preach the discipline here?
Well, I mean, discipline, it's a habit. It's not just something that you bring to your game on game day. It's something that you practice during the course of the week, whether it's, you know, not getting into an altercation with a teammate at practice, whether it's, and that rarely happens, but it's just the little things that you do, right? Discipline is, it's about going about your practice day and your life as a pro with proper habits. And I'll give you an example. If you're in the weight room and you're doing three sets of 10, you're doing three sets of 10. You're not doing two sets of 10 and a set of nine, right? If you're going to watch film and you've made time to watch film from 7 to 9, at night, you're watching film from 7 to 9. You're not watching film from 7 to 8:30 or 7 to 8:45. So it's about habits, right? And that to me is one of the things that I would focus on with players, is just continually focusing on those habits that require discipline. And the next thing you know, it carries over into everything that you do.
Yeah, 10 push-ups on every penalty in practice, right? Been doing that since training camp, and they'll call you out too. Paul Charbonneau one time came over and thought I was slipping, but I told him, or I said, check the film. I'm doing my 10 push-ups. And I did one yesterday where I was holding my tripod and putting on an ND filter for my lens, which is pretty much like sunglasses for a camera lens, for those who don't know. And I had to put the ND filter on. Then after everyone was done their 10 push-ups, I had to do mine. So I know, I see you, Baker, out there doing yours too, though.
Yeah, getting a bit better with the form. And it's funny. Yeah, it was Paul Charbonneau in training camp as well. Remember, we weren't used to this. Like, we're still getting used to Buck Pierce and the new rules and the new routine. And it was Charbonneau, the offensive line coach, actually came over and said, yeah, guys, just so you know, anyone in the organization on the field at practice does 10 push-ups. So it's good. Gets you back into the routine. You see Mojo out here doing them. Saw Dwayne Veneau, our president, doing them today. It's a little good organizational build-up thing, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know what? Hopefully we stop doing them, because if we do stop doing them, that means the team's playing a lot more discipline than it is right now. And, you know, it's interesting. The Lions didn't get penalized. I think they got penalized for 4 flags in that game.
4 for 55.
So the other thing, too, is 3 of them led to scores by the Red Blacks, right? So
yeah.
The other thing that comes into play there is how you react to adversity. And, okay, you give up a penalty you give up yardage in a first down with a penalty. Now you got to clutch up. Now you've got to make a stop. And the Lions didn't do that on 3 occasions. So that's the other lesson that is learned from this is, okay, once it happens, how do you react to it, right? Yep. And the Lions got to do a better job defensively with that as well.
One of those 4 penalties did come from Levi Bell. And although that's a negative point that you would have, you know, pick out from a game, I think Levi Bell and the other newcomer, Bradley Anae,
very good.
They had great games, right? Yeah. I was looking at the PFF pressures, and Bradley Anae was credited with a game-high 5 pressures on 23 pass rushes, which is great efficiency, right? Not playing every single down. And, you know, Matthew Betts was still very active, obviously the 4 sacks, but it wasn't from his pass rush either. There were multiple instances where the Lions were rushing 2 guys on defense and having 2 quarterback spies, and Betts got 2 of his 4 sacks doing that, and a spy contained with Dustin Crum, right? And Crum was playing good football too. So, you know, while Ottawa scoring was at 28 points, right? That's what they ended with. This is the garbage time stuff, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, Ottawa's playing good ball, and Crum is playing good ball on offense, but getting him to him 7 times is pretty impressive.
Yep. And then, hey, a solid D line will make a secondary and the rest of that unit look better. And, you know, and props to Ryan Rigmaiden and the scouts for not only getting these guys here, but getting them in there and getting them involved, and they make an impact. Should note that Mr. Anae has missed practice this week with a shoulder problem. So we'll see what that means if a Kamoko Touré, perhaps a Tomasi Laulile, draws back in against Calgary. We will preview the big Friday night tilt with the Stampeders here in just a little bit. But although outside today on this Tuesday is no indicator, it still seems like summertime. You know,
where was this weather this weekend?
I know. Exactly.
Like this weekend.
An actual weekend off.
You thought to yourself, this is the weekend, you know, last bastion of summer. We'll get some nice hot weather. No, cloudy, rainy. And then today, it's like 34 degrees in my car when I come back after practice. It was nuts.
Yeah. So I know. Like I didn't get the shady parking spot. My steering wheel was burning hot when I drove back from practice. But where I'm going with that is, I mean, going to get colder, a little damp here before long. You know, you go outside in these games, we'll have to go into Saskatchewan to end the season. Most likely a playoff game on the road somewhere, barring a major rally here over the last 5 games. But You want the guys in the trenches on both sides to be clicking on all cylinders when these games get more crucial, Moj.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we always talk about games being won and lost at the line of scrimmage. And, that's one of the things that the Lions did, I believe, against the Red Blacks. They won the battle at the line of scrimmage, particularly on the defensive side of the ball and offensively as well. And if you continue to do that, you'll be in good shape.
Nikki, or go ahead.
I was going to say something else, a little nugget that I was looking at. I wanted to make sure I had this right.
Turnover,
The
yeah, that's where
turnover
I was going to
battle.
go.
On Friday, the Lions won the turnover battle 2-1. That is the first time the BC Lions have won a turnover battle in a game since July 5th at Montreal. Just a crazy
Wow.
stat. So, I mean, that's something we were talking about over this past 2 months now that has something that has to change, right? The Lions are dead last in the turnover ratio category still. Still a long ways to go. But there's a huge positive for me is the offense was taking care of the ball. It was an efficient day, no costly fumbles, no, mental mistakes leading to interceptions. Efficiency.
Yeah, and going into that game last week, this Lions team was what, negative 12, negative 13 on the
Yeah.
year, something like that. So, yeah, a lot of times that's the difference between, you always talk about those five, six crucial plays that can determine a football game. Well, turnovers are a big part of that. We will talk more about the Stampeders and some of the key areas to focus on, but I should also mention TJ Lee getting a lot of work with the starting defense these past couple of days. Of course, officially re-signed after our last episode dropped last week, our first time to most likely talk about that. But just a veteran presence possibly back this week.
Yeah, it's one of the things I talked about with Buck Pierce that will appear in my column, but just that calming influence, that veteran presence who can kind of mentor, the Cam Stones or the Christophe Boyus or, some of the other young players in that secondary, whether it's a Kent, whether it's a Carter. So I think that's what TJ is going to bring to the table, just that calming veteran presence, and hopefully rubs off on a lot of the younger players.
Yeah, and it's great to see that familiar number six, Nikki. I know one of our all-time favorites on the team and the content side. It's like he's right at home, right?
Yeah, and there was funny last October there were a couple milestones that TJ Lee was approaching in the
Right.
tackles category, even interceptions, right? And now in our weekly marketing meeting, we were saying, hey, we got to get those graphics back and ready for Mr. TJ Lee because he's looking like he's poised to come back into the lineup. And we'll wait and see as the week progresses. But how this defensive backfield shakes out, right? TJ Lee can play Sam or the nickel spot. He got to get that in my head. He can play boundary halfback. He can play. Play
Yeah.
safety in some looks. We'll see how that all shapes out. But that's something I'm looking forward to seeing unfold on Friday.
Yeah, three tackles shy of Dante Marsh for second on the all-time list. That would be 587 Solomon Elamimian in top spot, 745.
Dante Marsh, now the defensive coordinator at my old JUCO, San Joaquin Delta in Stockton, California.
No way. Is that new this year? I knew he
Nope,
was.
sir, last couple of years, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for
So he's
him.
down in Stockton.
Yeah. Love Dante Marsh. Little lockdown you with Ryan Phillips, Corey Banks, Baron Miles. Speaking of great secondaries back in the day, wouldn't dare go deep on those guys.
Washington in the
Mark
mix.
Washington with the game on the line. Yeah, very good. All right. First and Now is presented in part by Hullo Ferries, proud island transportation partner of the BC Lions. Go easy, go Hullo. We will welcome in Natasha Stanishevsky coming up in a couple of minutes from Stampeders.com. What's the vibe in Cowtown as we get Rourke versus VA for the first time in the regular season? All kinds of great storylines this week. Coming up on First and Now on 730 CKNW and wherever you get your podcasts. First and Now is brought to you by Main Road Group, your roads, your team, connecting communities and driving our legacy. Matt Baker alongside the Moj and Nick Kowalski, and it's our honor to welcome to the show for the first time. And it's weird, we haven't seen Calgary yet in week
Oh,
16,
we
but
did
oh, we
in
did,
freak
yeah.
season, which seems like an eternity ago now.
Hey, you know what? It's funny you mention that because remember we had that in Langford, Starlight Stadium. We had our little makeshift temporary work area behind the bench. Locker room was, okay. And
How
then,
could I forget?
well, then I look up in the stands. I see Natasha Stanishevsky there, midfield, row five, with Huffnagel and his wife in the VIP section. It's Must be nice, you know?
Natasha, she knows people.
Yeah.
We have different memories of that game, I think, Matt. I don't recall being in such a cushy situation, but if that's how you remember it, then that's
Hey,
okay.
you had a seat, so at least that's better than nothing. I know we'll talk to the players. I don't know what the players thought about the locker room setup. I'm exaggerating. It was
Yeah.
outside of the weather being a little sketchy for mid-May. It was actually a pretty fun day. The fans loved it, and always have time for Vancouver Island. But now these two teams, the Lions and Stampeders, meeting with a little more on the line. It's a big one Friday night, Natasha. Overall, what's the pulse on the Stampeders right now ahead of this big Western clash?
I think the energy and the excitement and the knowing that it is a little bit of a bigger game than most, whether or not the players will admit that, I think it's there. They're obviously not too happy with the way they played against Edmonton, and they've had a whole bye week to sort of sit and stew over it. And they know that this is a big one for their leader, for Vernon. They are all well aware of that. So I think they are excited to help him get a win. I think they're excited just to get a win no matter what, and kind of get away from those losing vibes that they had against Edmonton. So I think everyone is looking forward to this one, me, myself included.
Yeah, I watched Vernon's post-practice availability on, I guess it was Monday, and he said all the right things about how just another game, and we need a win no matter again who it's against or however you want to say it, but it has to mean a little extra for him. I know it would because we dealt with it when he played Montreal for the first time after the trade, right? So it has to mean a little more, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we feel the same about that. You guys know him even obviously better than I do. And it was funny, I was watching tape from his time with BC, and it was so funny to see him kind of standing next to Nathan and not being a clear number one, because I feel like he has become such a clear number one here. Like, he's wanted that so much, and he's really jumped into that role with both feet. Like, he's always energetic, enthusiasm is high, he's always just really looking out, I think, for everybody on the team, and just wanting to really be the leader on this team. And like you said, how could it not mean a little bit more to beat the team that essentially didn't want you, right? And of course, he's not going to admit it, but he's a competitive guy. He wants to win, he wants that Grey Cup, he wants to do it with Calgary, and I think it would mean a lot to beat his former team on Friday.
Many years ago, I knew a coach who once said, who had a losing season. He said, "I've got to go out and find some players to be a good coach again." I think Dave Dickinson. I mean, at the end of last year, everybody and their dog wanted Dave Dickinson to be relieved of his duties as head coach of the Stampeders. Instead, he kind of followed that advice. He went out and got a good quarterback in Vernon Adams Jr. How much of the change in Calgary can attributed to Vernon, and how much can it be attributed to some of the new faces that you've brought in?
I think Vernon has a lot to do with it, just because he, I guess, is a proven quarterback, and everybody knew what he could do, and the fans especially were really excited for him to come in being a mobile quarterback. He can do it through the air as well, but we brought in so many other leaders as well, like so many guys. Dominique Grimes has been an outstanding leader offensively. Derek Moncrief defensively has emerged again as another leader. In fact, today during practice, he kind of, I don't know what was happening out there, things weren't going well, but he pulled the whole team kind of aside, barked a few words, "Let's get going," and the kind of the practice continued. Flo, who, as you guys know, unfortunately suffered that injury last week, so we won't have him for the rest of the season, but he's been a huge leader defensively. So I don't think it's just Vernon. I think there's been leadership at almost every single position, and some of the new coaches that we brought in have been, the players just rave about some of the coaches that we have. Baron Miles is a big one. John Bowman is another one. So it's just all these little pieces on, both sides of the ball, including coaches, and they've all just kind of come together. It was kind of just like a clean, almost a complete clean slate this year for the whole
I'm
team.
glad you mentioned Moncrief because a lot of people have been talking about Hutchins and other players on that defense. But you talk to people around the league and you talk to people within that organization, and it comes. A lot of people keep talking about Derek Moncrief and the impact that he's had in terms of that defense and his leadership skills.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if he was the same sort of leader in years past with other teams. Maybe he was, and I just wasn't aware of it. But to me, he's emerged as a huge one, especially also with the loss of Markel Lee early on in the season, because I think Markel was supposed to be a big leader as well. He still is, but obviously he hasn't been playing. So I feel like Derek has really stepped into that role. He's an older guy when we have a lot of younger faces on our team, especially on defense. So he's one of the older guys. And I think he really wants to win a Grey Cup, right? Like he just played his 100th game. We were talking about it, and he said he can't believe how fast the time goes. And after that last game against Edmonton, after that loss, he said it in the interviews. He said, "I still think we're going to win a Grey Cup." Like he's not afraid to say it. He says it all the time. "We're here to work," he says. And just the way you can always see him being vocal. And I think he leads by example too. Like just at practice, he's always working his body language all the time. It's like all business all the time. And you can see it in his play during the games as well.
Natasha, the main storyline in this game is definitely Vernon Adams Jr. playing his old team, but it's not shaping up to just be Vernon who's going to be placing his old or playing against his old team. And what I'm alluding to is it looks like Adrian Green could be making a return to the lineup this week for Calgary. For those who don't know, obviously Adrian Green was here the last couple of years, but Natasha, talk about the season that Adrian was having before he suffered his injury during the summer. And, what are some of the things when you started to notice that Adrian was kind of poised for a breakout year in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened pretty early, didn't it? I think even from when the Stampeders had that press conference to kind of introduce some of their new guys and their new free agents, he was one that stood out along with Damon Webb. And right from the get-go, I feel like so many guys, including Adrian, have just embraced the opportunity that they had here to start and to have all that playing time. And I mean, Adrian has been outstanding. That injury, I don't think anybody thought it was going to be, I don't think they thought he was going to be out as long as he has been. So it's great that it looks like he'll be back, especially for this game. And he's just been sort of a steady Eddie back there in the secondary for the Stamps.
When it comes to Calgary's receivers, it's no secret that Vernon Adams Jr., he publicly goes on record saying he likes the tall receivers, right? The guys like Dominique Grimes, Justin McInnes,
Yeah.
obviously here in BC. There's a new guy in town, Damien Alford. Again, one of those guys where it seems like him and VA have quite a special connection, right?
Yep, and you saw it early when Damon stepped in when or Damian stepped in when there were some injuries, and you can't miss him when he's out there, right? He's kind of one of those guys, which obviously Vernon recognizes. You just throw it up, and chances are pretty good that the moose is going to come down with it. So I think he really enjoys playing with Alfred, and Alfred is eager. He's not as getting as many reps as he was before because we have some of our more veteran receivers back in the mix. But for sure, whenever Alfred is out there, you always watch him because you just never know when that ball is going to go flying. You know, when VA is forced to kind of move out of the pocket or he's scrambling or whatever, you almost get more excited because you feel like he's going to throw some kind of crazy long bomb and somehow Alfred will come down with it. So he's been a really great addition to our team. A heck of a draft pick, that's for sure.
Well, it's funny you mentioned when VA scrambles because we know firsthand in BC when he does, you kind of hold your breath. And we know earlier this year he
Yeah.
actually got hurt on a scramble, and I actually DM'd him and I said, "Dude, do us all a favor, just go down. Don't try to get that extra yard." But it's funny you mentioned VA scrambling because that's the first thing that kind of came to my head is kind of like holding your breath.
Right. And I remember that exact play. I think we all do. And I'm glad you're thinking the same thing because I was just like, what? Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, he's a competitive guy. He wants to get the yards. I get it. But like, it just scares the heck out of us too when he takes off running like that.
Hey, Natasha, is there any fallout from Vernon being pulled in the last game and PJ Walker coming in? Because shots on the sidelines, he didn't look too pleased. And knowing VA, I don't think he was. And I just wonder how much of a chip on his shoulder he has heading into this game.
I know he didn't look happy, but I don't sense that there's any sort of kind of lingering effects from that. I mean, he was, I think Dave pulled him for his own safety, not to throw our O-line under the bus. I mean, there was a lot going on, but he was getting hit quite a bit. And at that point, it was just one of those nights for the team that there was nothing really going, nothing was happening out there that you sensed that they could actually launch some sort of last minute comeback and win that game. At least that's how I saw it. So I think Dave just said, that's enough. We had already seen like Flo was injured that game. We had a number of injuries that game. And I think at that point, Dave was like, he had just seen enough and you know, cut his losses and kind of move on from there. And I don't think to answer the initial question, I don't think it bothered VA that much. I shouldn't speak for him, but I haven't noticed any sort of lingering effects from that.
Natasha Stanishevsky from Calgary joining us here on First and Now for a few more minutes. And we were kind of talking before we started the formal interview off air that last year in Calgary, something they hadn't experienced since 2004, a non-playoff year, that's 20 years. And, what is your sense of the fan base and the market, just how excited that they have been with this resurgence, because we've seen some better crowds at McMahon Stadium this season too, right?
Yes, thank goodness. Numbers are definitely up. There was definitely buzz about Vernon. I mean, it took a while. The fans, they want to see a winning team. They want to see an entertaining product, but they're definitely coming around in way bigger numbers than before. And I think a lot of it is just that the stamps are in every single game now. Like, you know, and even if they get down early, sometimes we've seen them battle back time and time again. So they just have so many more weapons than they did last year. There's a lot of fight in this team, and I think the fans, I mean, they're not stupid. They can see it. Like I said, the stamps are in every single game, and they're never out of it. And they're just way more entertaining than they were last year. And that's what the fans want, right? You want to be entertained. So it's nice to see that they are coming back. It kind of sucks that we're going on the road after this one for three straight games, but hopefully we come back in first place. And that will get the fans out even more. We'll have to see.
You get to go to Montreal next week. Come on, you shouldn't be complaining. Come on.
No, I'm not. I'm excited, but we're just thinking Montreal and then back to BC and then Hamilton. That's a stretch of three games, two long road trips. I mean, I guess I don't need to talk to you guys about road trips, right? Heading out east. Those take a little bit out of you heading to Hamilton and then Montreal. At least they do out of me. I'm a zombie the next day always.
Yeah, we're not even playing the games, and
No.
there's nothing like
Right.
landing at 4:30 in the morning in the summertime, and the sun's already coming up, right?
Oh God. Yeah.
Well, it's really
But
wild.
we're looking, I mean, I think they're looking forward to the challenges. None of those will be easy games. Montreal is a huge test, and we all saw what they did to Saskatchewan. I mean, they did the Stamps a favor by beating Saskatchewan, but they also looked terrifying. So that'll be a huge test to kick off that stretch of road games.
Well, in this market, we're talking a lot about, hey, we don't want to go back east because we're trying to catch Calgary for second place. And then I know in Calgary, they're talking about trying to catch Saskatchewan for first place. But overall, Natasha, like the Nathan Rourke VA storyline, across the league right now, it just seems like it's in such a good position, right? Where there's a lot of uncertainty of who's going to get to, that Grey Cup game even, right? And a lot of still things to determine.
I mean, I would love to throw a question back to you guys and how you feel the team, your team has done this season. Not quite where they should be, or
They're
where you
still
thought they
finalists
might
though,
be.
right?
Yeah, fair to say.
Yes.
Definitely. I mean, Moj can jump in here too, but I think the expectation was 6-7 is not where they would want to be, but at the same time, you are what your record says you are, and they're definitely justified. I mean, there was a couple of games where the defense just gave this team no chance, and Mike Benavides will say that flat out, right? Now, whether it was the first game against Saskatchewan, the game in Toronto just before the Labor Day bye week,
Second half in Ottawa.
second half in Ottawa, the blown a lead against Hamilton here back in, what was it, late July. So just mentioned three or four that's,
Well, in their last
yeah.
seven games, they're averaging over 30 points on offense, and they're 3-4 in those last seven games. So The defense played better last week out against Ottawa, which is a good sign. The big thing is they got a pass rush that kind of masked some of the issues in the secondary. They still allowed Crum to go 30 of 35 for 305 yards passing, but they did get seven sacks, so that helped out matters. But it's one of those things. They have a young secondary, two first-year starters, two second-year starters, and they just got to keep, trying to get these guys to improve and trying to get to the level where they need to be.
I feel like, I mean, to me, peaking at the right time is the most important thing,
Oh,
right? And
yeah.
that's why I feel BC is dangerous because, of course, it matters what the first two-thirds of the season. Obviously, it matters a little bit, but if you can peak at the right time, which it kind of feels like the Lions might be doing, that's when you can make the most noise, I guess.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I know you don't want this to happen, but should they pull off an upset here on Friday, then I think more people will be talking, definitely. So should be fun.
Yeah.
Hey, before we let you go, the biggest question, talking about peaking, where's your golf game at? And
Oh.
for people that don't know, Natasha Stanishevsky, when we called her to play in the Moat Shootout, I don't really golf that much. I say I because I have created a monster. Next thing you're going to Ireland to golf. You're going to Cabot Trail. You're golfing all the time. So where's the handicap at right now? And what's the nicest
Yeah.
course you played this summer?
I won't reveal to you what the handicap is because it's embarrassing. I haven't played very much at all
No.
this summer, and I'm blaming it on the weather because it pretty much rained for all of July, and many Calgarians would agree with me. But the nicest course that I played this summer, I played Grey Wolf.
Yes.
And you
In the
played Grey
interior.
Wolf,
Yes.
Yep.
which was beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love playing new courses. That was a new one for me. And it was really hyped up, and it definitely lived up to the hype. That was a
Kootenays is
great
a
one. In fact,
very
I played
underrated.
it twice.
I was going to say Kootenays is a very underrated golf destination. Tons of great courses in that area.
Yeah, I need
Underrated
to
part of
get
the
back there.
province too,
Yeah.
really. Underrated part of the whole. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the people down there, they don't want to talk about it, how great it is, because they don't want everyone to
Yeah,
go
exactly.
there and make it all busy and crazy, right? So, but yeah, it's beautiful down there. We had a great time.
All right.
How about you, Moj? How's your game?
I was to
Oh,
say
sorry, I slipped in the question.
my game's
My game,
non-existent.
it's so bad, Natasha. Like
no.
two knees that need to be replaced. It's like I'm standing on a sheet of ice trying to hit a golf ball. No stability. It's
Oh.
mad how badly it's gone. Once I get my knees
You
fixed,
got
I
it.
won't have an excuse though. So I will get better.
I
But
thought you were supposed to get those fixed a while ago.
who knows when
No?
I'm gonna get them fixed?
They
Okay.
lost his position on the waiting
Exactly.
list,
They're
clearly.
back at the queue again.
Yeah, there you go. In due time. All right, Natasha, this has been great. We appreciate the time, and it's going to be a good one. We look forward to seeing you at McMahon on Friday. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, can't wait. Thanks for having me, guys, and may the best team win on Friday.
Well said. Natasha Stanishevsky joining us on First and Now, back in a couple of moments.
The playoff push is on, and your BC Lions are back at Save-On Foods Field at BC Place, Friday, September 26th at 7 p.m. to battle the Toronto Argonauts. Celebrate Indigenous culture all night long with live music, food specials, and a special atmosphere you won't want to miss. The first 10,000 fans through the gates get a free orange BC Lions t-shirt. Tickets start at just $19. Be part of the playoff push. Get your seats now at bclions.com. Roar!
First and Now is brought to you by Main Road Group, your roads, your team, connecting communities and driving our legacy. Matt Baker alongside Bob Marjanovic, Nick Kowalski, excellent stuff with Natasha Stanishevsky, doing great work with both the Stampeders and the Calgary Flames. And we will talk more about this matchup. Yeah, quirk in the schedule, right? First meeting between these two teams comes in week 16, game 14 for the Lions, game 13 for Calgary. There's the obvious storyline of Vernon Adams Jr., like we talked about, but we'll see Dom Rhymes at receiver, possibly Adrian Green making his return. And there's that Adam Big Hill guy, speaking of
Yeah.
TJ Lee possibly
John
getting in.
Bowman coaching the D
John
line.
Bowman, yeah, good. Good call.
So yeah, there's a lot of ex.
And an
Well, I mean, look at their head coach, former BC Lions quarterback Dave Dickinson as well. So
and another guy we mentioned earlier, Baron Miles. He's
yeah.
part of the coaching staff there with the Stampeders. Yeah, it goes without saying just the implications here. If you're a Lions team that wants to stay alive in the quest to host a playoff game, this game is pretty much everything, right?
Yeah, and we touched on it in the opening segment. To me, it boils down to winning the battle in the line at the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. Offensively, providing Nathan Rourke with time to find his receivers, opening up holes for James Butler, and then conversely, defensively, getting to Vernon Adams Jr. and getting him off his mark. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Lions can continue with the success they had last week on both sides of the ball.
We talked about the past couple of weeks, the Lions going against some Eastern opponents where maybe their defenses were in the bottom tier in terms of statistical categories. Well, Calgary's first in almost everything across the board, and it's pretty ridiculous what they've been doing this season on defense, and it speaks to Dave Dickinson, the coaching staff there. They found a lot of, hidden gems on that unit, right? So Calgary right now, they've allowed 18 touchdowns all year. The next closest team has 29 allowed. So that's something what so we talk about, maybe it was a strength on weakness game in the past couple of weeks. Nathan Rourke and this BC Lions offense, it's strength on strength against this Calgary defense. And I was looking at kind of under the hood, right? It's a new team. We haven't seen this team yet. Calgary, they don't blitz a lot. They play a lot of quarters according to PFF, looking at that data. And I think the reason why they do that is because they can get pressure with four. And guys like Jalen Hutchings, a rookie, number 96 defensive tackle, he has seven sacks. Clarence Hicks off the end, he has seven sacks too. So there's some guys on this defense that may not be household names, not like the Adam Big Hill, even a guy like Derek Moncrief, but they are getting it done with a four-man rush. I will say too, one other note on their defense, Florin Omalade, torn Achilles, unfortunately, but that's going to be a big hit to them, and we'll see how they, adjust to that.
Yeah, no doubt. And another area, we've talked about guys practicing, not practicing, and looking like James Butler could perhaps be on the shelf, pretty much a non-participant in the first couple of days. So Xander Horvath, Moj, getting a lot of work with the ones and establishing a run game and not being one-dimensional is obviously a big key to attacking this Stampeders defense.
Yeah, and you don't have to put up monster numbers in the run game, but you have to have the opposition respect the run game. That's the one thing that you always you look at from an offensive perspective is, as long as they're respecting the run game and having to defend it, then you have a shot with your offense. But if your offense all of a sudden becomes one-dimensional, whether it be by score or whether it be by the fact that you're completely ineffective running the football, it makes life on defense a lot easier, especially when you're looking at teams that are facing second and long situations.
Yeah, and it'd be a little unfortunate if James Butler couldn't go on Friday because if there is one area that you may be able to attack this Calgary defense, it is on the ground, right? We talked about Calgary coming off a bye, and the last time the Stampeders defense took the field, they allowed almost 250 rushing yards to the Edmonton Elks, right? Saw Justin Rankin run all over them, and that's a formula that the Lions could see if they could try and repeat, and in terms of trying to get some production against this unit. But however it comes, right? We talked about Justin McInnes heating up too. Keon Hatcher still doing his thing. So, lots of options on offense for the Lions, and the chess match that's going to result in lots of options on defense for the Calgary and how they want to attack.
Yeah, definitely a chess match. And Moj, we've talked about the line of scrimmage at length. Any other areas that you're intrigued to see shake down here on Friday?
Well, if Calgary wants to send four, if the Lions can take care of business, now you're forcing Calgary into sending the blitz. One of the things that James Butler does extremely well is block. And, everybody thinks about running backs just running with the football, but James Butler is excellent at pass pro. He's excellent at running his routes, and, receiving. So that's the other thing, too, that you got to look at Xander Horvath is how will he fare in terms of, picking up the blitz and helping out the offensive line in terms of blocking. How will he fare if indeed he does play in terms of catching the football and providing Nathan Rourke with a threat out of the backfield? So, running back, we always kind of have a tendency to look at the stats in terms of what they run, but that may be like a third of the total snaps that they play. What are they doing with the other two thirds? And that's where James Butler really proves his worth, as he's such a good all-round back in all three phases.
Yeah, and on the flip side of the ball, Calgary does move the ball really well on the ground, and it's kind of more by volume looking at it. They rank second in rushing yards per game, but sixth in yards per carry, and it's really a one-man show for them too with Dedrick Mills, right? And he's been there for a couple years now, physical runner. And I want to bring this up too because we were talking to Ryan Phillips actually on the road in Ottawa a couple weeks ago, and we were kind of just listing off Calgary's receivers, right? There's a guy like Dominique Rimes who's leading the team in yards. Jalen Philpott's having a nice year, but he was saying that Damien Alford, the first overall pick, he's like, that's the guy
The moose.
you really have to look out for because of his natural size, athleticism. He's like, Ryan Phillips is saying, that's the stuff you can't teach, right? It's a gift that Damien Alford has. It's why he went first overall in this past CFL draft. So it's the secondary's first test up against those receivers, familiar faces in D. Rimes, but a new guy like Damien Alford to look out for.
Yes, and such a great matchup on so many levels. There will be a return meeting in 2 weeks' time in the Gravy Bowl at Save-On Foods Field at BC Place on Saturday, October the 4th. And if you really want to potentially set that one up to mean a lot as far as positioning in the West Division, a win here goes a long way, Nick.
Yeah, and I know people are asking about playoff clinching scenarios and everything. I mean, you can't even do it right now because I
No.
think there's infinite, scenarios right now with the crossover looming. And you look at the next couple games here. It's you're in Calgary, then you host Toronto, and then you host Calgary, right? And those are three pivotal games in terms of this kind of, mid-tier standings, right? I know Calgary has 8 wins right now, but if you sweep Calgary in these next 3 weeks, suddenly second place isn't too far-fetched, right? And if you get a win over Toronto too, that helps, keep them below that crossover limit, because in the crossover, if you're tied with the team, it goes to the
No
team in the
good.
division, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's another thing, right now there's a 6-7 log jam, right, with Winnipeg and BC, but unfortunately the Bombers do have the season series and therefore the tiebreak too, right? So got to start collecting wins now.
Yep. And very quickly, before we wrap things up, looking ahead at what else is going on in the next few weeks and around the CFL, Nathan Rourke's milestones here, something to keep in mind. He's now ninth on the Lions' all-time list in the last 2 weeks. Passing yards, he's passed Buck Pearce, Casey Printers, Vernon Adams Jr., 91 away from Doug Flutie. Doug Flutie's 2 years here, he accumulated 9,579. Nathan enters at 9,488. And Nathan closing in on his first 5,000-yard passing season as well, and 10,000 for his career. I break it all down in a column at bclions.com. Check it out. Also got Nathan's thoughts on facing VA. Nathan was having a little fun with me earlier this week too. Did you hear me? He called me Farhan. Did you catch that? Yeah, it was,
Yeah, you tell me about this story.
So standing in for Lalji asking the hard-hitting questions. So there you go. I got my big break, I guess. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick was filming that. Good times.
Made me laugh. I almost threw a TSN in the YouTube description. I was gonna put TSN's
Now, for
Farhan
people that
Lalji.
don't know, the final say showed up at practice. I don't know. He had to go get his haircut or something. So he had
Get
to
his
leave
makeup
early.
done, yeah.
It's not like covering the lines is a priority or something. So he got you to stand in and
Yes.
ask the questions. And then Nathan jokingly referred to you as
Yes.
Farhan.
Yeah.
So when you saw it on TSN that night, you actually thought that it was Farhan there
Yeah.
asking the questions. Instead, he was, I don't know, getting his haircut,
Yeah.
whatever
More
he's doing.
intelligent questions, I
In the
think.
full version, you can hear how it all translates. But
Even
Owen stuck around.
Owen
Shout out,
stuck around.
Owen.
Yeah. And then even Steve Ewan, Big Daddy from the province and theprovince.com, texted me earlier. He's like, "Did Nathan call you Farhan on purpose?" And I said, "Yeah." And his response was, "I love that guy." So there you
Nathan's
go.
becoming a seasoned pro with the media. He's having a lot of funny,
Oh, yeah.
the back and forth with JC Abbott some post games, right? And he's
Yeah.
doing a lot of these PSA works for us now, and he's ripping them off in one take. So I'm telling Nathan too. I'm like, hey, you're getting pretty damn good at this. It's with reps, I guess, but yeah.
It's good that he's enjoying it a lot more. Last year was tough, and yeah, it's good to see. It's what you want from him. Even when the team's not winning, it's good to have a little levity. First and Now is presented in part by Hullo Ferries, proud island transportation partner of the BC Lions. Go easy, go Hullo. Back to go around the CFL coming up on First and Now. Final couple moments on First and Now, your favorite Tuesday night ritual. Glad to be here. Matt Baker, the Moj, Nick Kowalski. Calgary beckons. One more practice day and then a travel day. Able Auctions pregame show, 5:30 Pacific. Yourself and Julio on Friday. Going to be a good one, Moj.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Again, as we talked about, this is going to be a test for this Lions secondary going up against Vernon Adams Jr. and that receiving corps. It's going to be a test for the defense overall, particularly the defensive line. Can they get to Vernon Adams Jr., get him off his mark, and make life difficult for him in that passing game? We're going to find out.
Lions Stampeders, the second game of the Friday doubleheader. It's 6-7 Toronto at 6-7 Montreal, excuse me, at 5-8 Toronto. Argonauts going with Jarrett Daigie at quarterback, with Nick Arbuckle out. Chad Kelly not ready to go yet. Big one. The Alouettes get this win, Nick. Very much in the driver's seat to host a playoff game.
Yeah, and for those scoreboard watching, the Lions fans listening, that is a good thing. I think we want the Montreal Alouettes to take care of the Toronto Argonauts, because that just cements Toronto in third place in the East more. And like we were talking about earlier, that is good for the BC Lions, because if the unfortunate situation comes where they have to cross over because they're fourth in the West, that makes it all the easier. And Jarrett Daigie coming off a game-winning drive. That was a pretty electric game on Saturday afternoon out at BMO. Classic CFL game.
Was it ever. Saturday, we'll be back home doing our own scoreboard watching. Winnipeg at Ottawa at noon. Moja, the Bombers at 6-7, just like the BC Lions. Looking like we could have Chris Streveler behind center again. This is an interesting one. If you're the Ottawa Redblacks, probably have to pretty much almost run the table here too, right?
Yeah, and you know, they're in a tough predicament, so obviously you look at this game and you hope that, you know, that Edmonton loses. But here's the one thing that I look at when I'm looking at all of these games. To me, it doesn't matter. You just got to go out there and take care of your own business. You can't control what's happening in these other games, who wins, who loses. You have to take care of your own business. If the Lions do that, they're going to be in good shape. If they don't, well, now you're at the mercy of someone else. And to quote Mike Howie, even if you do get into the playoffs and you haven't corrected things, you're going to be a one and done anyway. So
yeah,
to me, it's about just taking care of what's in front of you.
Week 16 wraps up later Saturday, Edmonton and Hamilton. The Elks got to be still stewing over how they let that one get away in Toronto. But Edmonton, yeah, really behind the eight ball now. A big opportunity missed to create a three-way tie at 6-7. They're now 5-8, still in fifth spot.
Yeah, and a lot of injuries to Edmonton's, you know, big name free agent acquisitions, right? And even guys like Nick Anderson aren't practicing still, right? So, but I think the new guys on Edmonton, like guys like Joel DeBlanco, right, a former first overall pick, I think he's been playing good football, and that's the reason why Edmonton's been in games. And then Justin Rankin right now, he's not quite on the 1,000 yard pace when it comes to 1,000 rushing yards, 1,000 receiving yards in one season, but he's pretty damn close. And he's been an impressive player to watch this season for Edmonton, as well as, you know, Cody Fajardo leading things under center now.
Okay, for those on the podcast, be sure to stick around and check out our talk with Cam Tucker, a little between the lines from BCLC. Should be noted, next Tuesday, Boston Pizza Guilford, recording at 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for some announcements on our special guests. Our fourth of five on locations this year. Going to be fun out there at Boston Pizza. Our good friend Yash taking care of business. And we look forward to seeing you there. Lions Stampeders, Friday, right here on 730 CKNW. Enjoy. Be safe.
The playoff push is near. Join the BC Lions at 7 p.m. September 26th as they face Toronto at Save-On Foods Field at BC Place. Celebrate Indigenous culture with live music, food specials, and orange t-shirt giveaways. Tickets at bclions.com.
All right, for those listening on the podcast, as always, a little bonus for you. Cam Tucker from BCLC and PlayNow.com. And a fan of the last place Seattle Seahawks in the NFC West. Kem, how are you?
I'm doing good. I see that this is how we're going to start the show. We're just going to trash talk a little bit. Hey,
no.
My Seahawks, you know, they look pretty good. They look
they
pretty
did.
Good on Sunday. So, yeah.
They did. And, yeah, it's not like there's 15 more games to go, so we shouldn't get too, too ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's keep it north of the border, shall we? We're talking about Friday football, not Sunday football at this present moment. Lions and Stampeders. British Columbia opened as a 4.5 point underdog. Now 5.5. They're getting 5.5 points on the road, Cam.
Yeah, and this is going to be a huge matchup for the BC Lions. You know, time to string some wins together going in down the stretch drive here. But this is a very tough matchup for the BC Lions. I'm not surprised, obviously, that the Lions opened as underdogs. And to be quite honest, not surprised to see the line move in the direction of the Stampeders. The Lions right now come into this game, I think, you know, offensively, they're putting up points. They've shown that they can be an electric offense. And I think they're coming off one of their most complete games of the season, and now they go up against a very good Calgary Stampeders team that is really the surprise of the league, I think, this year, because nobody was giving them a shot, you know, at all to win the Grey Cup, and now they have the third best odds on play now to win. So this is a really tough matchup for the BC Lions going into the road on Friday, and right now looking at how the betting is shaping up. You know, I think we've taken about 53% of the money is currently on BC plus 5.5. And then you look at the bets, 60% of the bets on the BC Lions to cover the spread. So the early indication from the bettors is that they do like the BC Lions in that number at plus 5.5. But again, I mean, this is prove it time for the BC Lions. You're coming off of a big game, a big win. You know, there's this narrative around being dangerous. Certainly, we've seen that on the offensive side of the ball. Now you go up against a team that you very well could see in the playoffs, and you got to raise your game. This is the time to raise their game. So it should be an interesting matchup.
Interesting over under set at 54.5.
Yeah, I mean, hey, the BC Lions right now, the over has hit in 7 consecutive BC Lions games. I mean, this really is quite a phenomenal streak, and it just barely hit last week against Ottawa. The total was 56.5, you know, it for a long period of time there was lingering at about 57 points scored. There was a late garbage time touchdown, and so the Lions right now have been, you know, they've been churning out these wins on the over. Then you look at the flip side of this, and the Calgary Stampeders, the under has hit in 5 of the last 6 games, and that Calgary defense is, I mean, they're a problem. They're a problem. Right now, I think it's they've given up the fewest, you know, explosive plays in the CFL. So that's, you know, rush over 20 plus yards or pass over 30 plus yards. And then you look at the Lions, they're a team that really thrives on the big play. They're second right now in the CFL in terms of those big plays. And so this really is shaping up to be, you know, two teams that are just kind of polar opposites. The Lions right now are flexing offensively. Calgary for a long time has been flexing defensively. And a prime example of that is what they did against Saskatchewan in 2 meetings this year. They've kept Saskatchewan to a total of 25 plus or 25 points scored. So it's very impressive. This is a total that's very interesting because the under has hit so often in Calgary Stampeders games, but the over has hit so often in BC Lions games. So we're going to see how this one shapes up on Friday.
And Cam, the overhitting in BC Lions games means they're putting up points. Obviously, Nathan Rourke at the helm of that offense. What have Nathan's recent performances on offense? What have they done for his current MOP odds?
Yeah, I mean this was huge. You know, Nathan Rourke MOP odds right now at play now are plus 900, so that puts him right now third on the board. And the big thing is, you know, there are fluctuations in these markets throughout the course of a season. A lot of things can factor into it. Nathan Rourke was plus 3300, plus 3300 to win MOP just 8 days ago. Then he moved to plus 2600, and now he's plus 900. So I mean, in the span of, you know, not even 10 days, we've seen a massive movement on Nathan Rourke to win the MOP. You look at what he's been doing offensively. 7 out of his last 9 games, he's hit 300 yards passing. He can run the football. This offense is putting up points at a very, very impressive rate. There's the talk of, you know, if the Lions get into the playoffs, do you really want to match up against this offense the way that it's going and the way that Nathan Rourke right now is playing? You know, that's an interesting question. The way that Nathan Rourke's playing, they can be a dangerous football team. But looking at the contenders on the board. Bo Levi Mitchell is still the favorite at -110, so he's really kind of separated himself as the favorite. And then Vernon Adams is second on the board at +125. But you look at Calgary's defense going into this matchup. If Nathan Rourke can have a big day against the Stampeders, I would not be surprised if we see further movement in his MOP odds, given just the huge massive swing that we saw within the span of about 8 days.
That's a good segue, Cam, into your bet boost because it looks like you're targeting one Nathan Rourke and a fellow Calgary Stampeder by the name of VA.
We're I know the narrative and the matchup. It's quite interesting, but yeah, we're looking at Nathan Rourke. We're likely going to go back to his passing yard milestones, and then with Vernon Adams, I'd be really interesting to see where the line is set for his passing yards. I was looking at his numbers throughout the season. He's averaged about 256 yards passing per game. And he's in the conversation for the MOP. And I'm not taking anything away from Vernon Adams. You look at the season that Calgary's having. He's a big reason for that. It's going to be interesting though to see the line and where this ends up. And so I might even look, depending on where that line is, we might look at perhaps having the under Vernon Adams passing yards attached to our parlay. And you know what, guys, I hate to say this. Everybody loves to bet overs. Everybody loves to win on overs. I'm actually going to go with the under 54 and a half in this parlay. I think that it's time. I think that we're going to see a physical, tough football game. I think we're going to see the defense is kind of not dominate, but I think that they're going to have a better day. They're going to make life difficult on the quarterbacks, and we'll see where this parlay shakes up in the end. But I'm definitely looking at the under, just given the fact that Calgary against with the under, 5-5-1 in the last six games, and they can be such a difficult defensive opponent.
All right. No shortage of storylines here. We've been looking forward to this one for a while. And let's go.
This is a
Feeling
big one. Yeah.
feels like a playoff game in September, as close as you'll get to one. Cam, excellent stuff. And we will look forward to speaking again next week. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Cam Tucker from BCLC, a little between the lines, wrapping up this week's edition of First and Now.